I'm Matt Bush with BPR News. I'm speaking with Reverend Dr. Marsha Mount Shoup, pastor at Grace Covenant Presbyterian Church here in Asheville, also the co-host of our Going Deep podcast. Thank you for coming in.
Oh, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
So your doctorate's in religious studies.
Mm-hmm.
How much was Billy Graham and what he did as a figure really part of how any religious student in the United States would see as they study Christianity?
Well, I mean, one of the most important concepts that you study when you're looking at the landscape of religion in America is the phenomena of the denominations in this country. That's sort of the touchstone of what it means to be especially Protestant in America, but also just Christian in America. So Billy Graham is an interesting figure because he sort of was a trailblazer, probably unconsciously so, in creating a space in which those lines started to blur and not be so important. He really had a broad appeal like no one else before him, and frankly, probably not many other people after him, that began to loosen the hold that the denominational lines, especially in mainline Protestantism, had on, frankly, everything from the government to the economy to just the kind of conventional culture of this country. So you sort of can't understate that if he jiggled that loose, he did something profound in this country.
He was ordained Southern Baptist in the Southern Baptist Church, mm-hmm. but it had a break with them sort of early in his career. How did he blur the lines? And what is the significance, again, of blurring the lines that it was no longer being a Baptist or being a Presbyterian or being a Methodist that it became being a Christian?
Well, I think he blurred the lines in a lot of ways. First was just in his persona. I mean, people gravitated to him. People listened to him. He had a lot of integrity, and people responded to that. Just the fact that he was a Southern Baptist living in Montreat, which as a Presbyterian, I can tell you is the mecca of Southern Presbyterians, at least. And he navigated those waters just seamlessly. He was loved there. And people tell stories of just how he was always ready to stop and talk and greet people no matter who you were. And, you know, he was a gracious person. But I think one of the bigger things he did was he spoke to the heart of human beings, you know, whether you were American. I mean, this was global as well. And he elicited change in people. People turned their lives around because of him. He was a transformative voice, and it was effective. So I think one of the ways he shook loose denominational lines is that there became something very predictable and stale about, well, you're Methodist and you do this, you're Presbyterian, you do this, and the Baptists do this. And he kind of breathed life into, well, if you're Christian, you do this. Now, not all Christians would agree with his interpretation of that. But certainly he opened the door for a lot of people to kind of take on an identity as Christian rather than Presbyterian or Methodist or whatever, or Baptist.
And it sort of led to what we would now call evangelical Christianity, at least in the modern era, that he sort of, as you said, blurred the denominational lines so that no longer that wasn't what you identified with, I guess, mm-hmm. many Christians, that it became evangelical Christians. How do you look at that?
Well, it's interesting because he's sort of a complicated part of that trajectory in this country, because in some ways evangelical is now equated with conservative politically, or the religious right. You know, technically that term evangelical just means that you are called to spread the good news of Jesus Christ. So every Christian should be evangelical, but that term has certainly become politicized. And Billy Graham was a person who was certainly up close to the political conversation, but he did it in a very savvy way. And he kind of pushed back toward against the religious right on some things. So he was a bridge person in some ways, but then he was also somebody who could speak truth into a lot of different communities. Now, saying that, he was also a complicated man. America wants a hero. We want somebody who's all good, but he's just like the rest of us. You know, the things that had integrity for him also created complexity for people like me, a woman in ministry, or people who were LGBTQ in their sexual identity. He was also a complicated part of the civil rights conversation in the 60s, where he insisted on not speaking to segregated audiences. He also wanted to put the brakes on, you know, some of the activism of the Black church. So he really had a way of kind of, he was really sort of a hybrid figure that even when people disagreed with him, he found a way to be in relationship that wasn't without complexity. And I think in many ways, in that way, he holds up a mirror to us as Americans in terms of our religious identity, not only as somebody we could aspire to be who doesn't have to kind of fit in one box, but as somebody who shows us some of our demons, you know, that we don't really deal with race as well as we should as Christians. We haven't been able to graft in issues of gender and sexual identity as seamlessly as one would hope a faith that is based on love would do. So I find him to be somebody that's, he gives us many gifts in the way he lived his life, both in the wonderful things that he did and the people that he touched, and in the things that he didn't do perfectly and didn't do well in some ways.
Talk about, you had the Crusades, filled stadiums. Now, there were preachers obviously before him that would do more sort of the tent revival kind of thing. But as in the modern era, as we built these much larger stadiums for sports and all that, he was filling those. What about him, and I guess what about this sort of phenomenon of going to these very large gatherings, do people gravitate to, and I guess why do they gravitate necessarily to him or his message to go to these very large gatherings to see someone preach?
Yeah, what a great question, and lucky for me, it connects to sports too. So what an important thing for us to pay attention to these days, as, you know, kind of sports fandom is, you know, kind of off the charts in popularity, and, you know, kind of the practice of Christianity isn't. And what he did was he created an experience for people. It was a visceral experience. It was a revival. There was energy. There were feelings. There was movement. Lives were changed. People felt things in their bodies. They left those experiences different, and word spread. So I think it gets down to the deep, you know, kind of embodied experience that we're all hungry for, to really be fully alive. And he gave people a way to do that in the context of faith. And he also gave people a way to do that in the context of salvation, which, you know, is no small thing. If you promise someone that they're going to be okay, that's a compelling message. So I think he really tapped into something deeply ontological about what makes human beings motivated to change their lives and to actually take a whole day and go and be somewhere and spend time with people and take a risk. He was a master at that. He really was. There aren't many people like him.
Where does now, I guess, Christianity stand, you know, Protestant Christianity, mainline Christianity, with his death? And you've talked some of the things about how denominational lines were sort of blurred, and there's this identity of evangelical Christianity that sort of takes hold. Where does it stand now? Does your denomination, does your identity with a denomination still matter as much as, say, it would have 50, 60, 70 years ago?
That's an interesting question right now, because what I'm seeing is a little bit of a kind of soft resurgence of denominationalism right now. I think it's because of our political climate, and people are looking for frameworks of meaning and how to be engaged in what's happening in the world. I also think we're in a sort of sobering place in terms of the religious conversation and how religion and politics are intersecting. I can't think of a time when Christians were more divided against each other. I think in this country right now, you know, there's a lot of grief around how Christianity motivates people and to take part into the political conversation, and how alienated we feel from people who claim the same faith tradition. I don't think that cuts across denominational lines as much right now as it does across partisan lines. But at least in the Presbyterian Church, I'm seeing some evidence where that people are kind of coming back to, well, who are we as Presbyterians? And what does it mean that this faith tradition has embraced the faith practice of protest and reform and transformation? I don't know how like huge of a kind of wash of new membership or anything that's bringing in, but I'm sensing a new energy around those questions. And I just think it's because how much is up for grabs right now in our country politically. And probably spiritually, too, I guess.
You sort of hinted at it a bit briefly in one of your earlier answers about Billy Graham's sort of, you know, what he practiced and what he preached about gender.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that's sort of most famously known is the Billy Graham rule, where he would not be in a room alone with a woman who was not his wife. And we sort of saw a resurgence of this, at least an interest of it, because Vice President Mike Pence follows this. What is your take on it? And you mentioned the complexity. It's far more complex to you, even as a woman in ministry, of what that rule really means.
Absolutely, it is more complex. And I think, it again, if Billy Graham does anything for us today as Americans, as he passes on to his great reward, let it be that he holds a mirror up to us. His rule, the Billy Graham rule, about the way he engaged with women was in a time when it was not uncommon for, you know, men in power to abuse their power and to use that to have sexual relationships with women who they had more power than. Now we're seeing right now with our Me Too moment that has persisted, and that it's an epidemic in our country that men with power we have a lot of evidence that many of them abuse their power, and they do it by acting out aggressively sexually with women who have less power. So on the one hand, the feminist in me says, hey, I'm your equal. We should be able to sit down and have a meeting, just the two of us, and engage in a conversation about theology or church politics. And I feel like we should be able to do that. But then there's another part of me that has lived in the church long enough and knows how patriarchal of an institution it is to know that there are very few examples I can give you of that in which there wasn't some complexity to the men that I was engaging with in terms of the way they were using their power. So yes, it's problematic that that he had that kind of hard and fast rule, but I'll take a Billy Graham any day over a sexual predator. And this was the practice he had to maintain integrity. As far as I know, he did. I hope we don't ever hear of a story coming out that he didn't. As far as I know, he did. And, you know, I'm grateful for that. I'm grateful that he didn't ruin people's lives by not holding that line. So I do think, you know, as a feminist myself, I know how quickly we can draw lines and say, well, you're either with him or against him on this. And I'm kind of both. I see the offense of it, and I also see the gift of it.
I think last question, the Southern identity of it.
Yeah.
What does that mean that he was Southern, and how did that, I guess, really help him build such a great audience and build such a great following? Was his Southern identity a part of that? And obviously what it means to people in this region that he was Southern, and that, you know, the museum and the library, all that will be in Charlotte. There are things here in Asheville.
Mm-hmm.
The importance of his Southern identity to what he did.
Well, first of all, I don't want to offend you as somebody from Pennsylvania, but everything sounds better in a Southern accent.
Is that why John speaks the way he does?
Yes,
he is from Pittsburgh,
yes, I know,
just like me.
But he has appropriated that because he knows how effective it is. So the first thing is just it's more pleasing to hear things in a Southern accent. I'm biased, but yes, I do think his Southern identity is important, and I think also a complicated part of his identity, as we see this kind of retrenchment of some of the worst parts of Southern identity around race, and just around the kind of hard and fast cultural lines that the South can kind of embody. They're everywhere else in our country too, but this, as Southerners, we just have a way of really amplifying those those things. And so, you know, we have to remember Billy Graham was a Southern pastor with a world, you know, kind of stage. And he did something really radical when he said, Martin Luther King, join me at the pulpit, and I will not speak to this audience if it is a segregated audience. And he did something that was toxic by pushing back against the activism of the Black church, saying slow down. You know, he could have been one of the people that Martin Luther King was talking about in his letter from the Birmingham jail. He didn't want there to be marches. He didn't want them to push so hard, people of color to push so hard about these changes in our society. And some people would argue he really helped a Nixon and other people with the Southern strategy, quote unquote. So his Southern identity was a potent part of his impact. And just like everything else about him, not without complexity.
Well, Reverend Dr. Marcia Mountshoot, thank you so much for coming in. You're obviously quite used to being in the studio here, but thank you so much for coming in and talking today.
Well, it's always a pleasure, Matt. Thank you for having me.